more than the same period in 2021 and over 50% more than pre-pandemic levels. The Independent Food Aid Network coordinator Sabine Goodwin, commenting on the study's results, said, "It's very clear that people have been trying to muddle through the winter on credit and are now building up debts that will push people over the edge." Sabine Goodwin accused the government of unsustainable and unethical reliance on charitable food aid, warning that without a change of approach, there will be nowhere for people to turn to. Food inflation is at 16.7% and the cost of gas is nearly 130% higher than a year ago in the United Kingdom. The Office for Budget Responsibility, the OBR, forecast in November that households' disposable income would fall by 4.3% in 2022-2023, the largest drop since comparable records began in 1956. The Independent Food Aid Network research found that food banks are struggling to meet record demand from people who are in work, including NHS staff and teachers. More than 80% reported supporting a significant number of people for the first time, while many said demand was growing among pensioners and families with newborn babies. Cost of living increase were given as the biggest problem, followed by inadequate wages and waiting times for initial universal credit payments. Benefit restrictions and deductions were cited by one-third of independent food banks as a motivating factor. Notably, the workers who are going out on strike make up a large portion of those who have turned to food banks, as the most extensive public sector strikes in decades have been brought on by a real earnings decline and rising inflation rate. The raging cost of living crisis in Britain began in 2021, when prices for many basic items rose faster than household incomes, causing real incomes to plummet. Apart from soaring inflation, the COVID-19 pandemic and Western sanctions imposed on Russia over the conflict in Ukraine are among the major factors driving the crisis. Reuters news agency has also covered the story and tells us more. A leading business company has revealed that more than 70% of British households fear they will be severely hit by the cost of living crisis in the first part of 2023, up from 54% at the end of last year. Survey data from market researcher Nielsen IQ showed recently that rising inflation rate and deteriorating economic situation have weighed more pressure on Britons during the first months of 2023, disappointing the majority of households about the country's economic future. Market researcher Nielsen IQ reported that UK grocery sales on a value basis rose by 7.6% in the first 4 weeks of 2023 due to an increase in food price inflation to 13.8%. However, volume sales fell by 6.9%, reflecting the unprecedented deepening of the cost of living crisis. Mike Watkins, Nielsen IQ's head of retail and business insights, said, "We expect a challenging first quarter for the grocery industry, with inflation very much top of mind for shoppers." He added, "As a result, shoppers will continue to trade down to cheaper brands or private label products." The damning report came on the heels of another survey, which revealed that one in five British adults turned to eating food past its use-by date or consuming smaller portions this winter. According to published figures by the Office for National Statistics, 18% of British adults either used out-of-date food due to the rising cost of groceries. The rates were even higher among those with depression, diabetes, or dependent children. After a tough 2022, British consumers have been grappling with an even tighter squeeze on their finances this year, with the inflation rate running at 10.5% and a looming recession. The skyrocketing prices caused by surging inflation have prompted many labour forces across the country to stage strikes and protests to air their concerns about economic challenges in the face of an intensified cost of living crisis. The Wales Online website has also covered this story. A leading youth charity has revealed nearly half of the young population of Britain fear they will never earn enough money to support a family as the cost of living crisis deepens across Britain. Releasing its 2023 Youth Index recently, the Prince's Trust, a youth charity that has carried out a survey among 16 to 25-year-olds during a 14-year period, revealed that 45% of these youngsters in the United Kingdom have no hope of establishing a new family due to the soaring cost of commodities and services. The Prince's Trust said the age group's happiness and confidence is at its lowest level since it started the research in 2008, and they are most unhappy about their money and mental health. The report revealed that 57% of young people said the cost of living crisis is the biggest worry for their future, while 34% said the coming recession is their greatest concern. About 46% said they felt hopeless about the future because of economic uncertainty. The data, which is from an online YouGov opinion poll of more than 2,000 young people in Britain, showed that 39% of the age group 16 to 25, from less affluent backgrounds, agreed that thinking about money depresses or stresses them. The Prince's Trust UK chief executive Jonathan Townsend said, "Having already lived through one of the most turbulent times to be young, this year's Prince's Trust NatWest Youth Index is a warning sign that post-pandemic young people's well-being has not recovered." Most concerningly, the report also suggests that these challenges are hitting young people from the most disadvantaged backgrounds the hardest, with those who received free school meals or who are unemployed reporting consistently worse well-being in all aspects of their lives. According to the Prince's Trust report, around 64% of respondents said their biggest goal in life is achieving financial security. The study also revealed that around 70% believe that having a job that gives them financial stability is good for their mental health, while 59% say being employed at all was good for their mental well-being.
Wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
Protesters have returned to major cities across Europe to voice their anger at the rising cost of living across the continent. In Spain, people held a massive rally in Madrid against what they call the regional government's dismantling of the public health care system. Officials say 250,000 people turned out, but organizers put the number as high as a million. That is the largest such demonstration in recent months. Protesters accuse the regional government of prioritizing private health. They say the public health service is suffering from staff and equipment shortages because of the government's policies. Some primary care doctors and healthcare workers have also been holding regular strikes over better working conditions and pay.
The condition of the public health system is deteriorating. The number of doctors have been decreasing with medical conditions getting worse. Many medical centers have been closed.
The region's right-wing leader has repeatedly claimed that the protesters are motivated by political interests. And in the Portuguese city of Lisbon, tens of thousands of teachers have taken to the streets amid public discontent over the cost of living crisis. It is the third time in less than a month that teachers and school workers have held mass demonstrations. Teachers want a pay rise and are also calling on the government to speed up career progression. Officials say negotiations with teachers' unions are ongoing and express hope that an agreement would be reached soon. Portugal is one of Western Europe's poorest countries, which is seeing decades-high inflation and is grappling with the cost-of-living crisis.
We are here to claim our rights, which were taken away from us a long time ago. Our careers have been frozen for a long time, and that can't be. We have the right to have a more dignified career. We can't work like this. It just can't be.
Protests in Spain and Portugal come as passengers across Germany have witnessed widespread travel chaos after a major trade union called on airport workers to go on a strike over a pay dispute. Verdi Trade Union called for the industrial action after it said collective bargaining efforts to settle wage disputes with the government failed. Since last year, European airlines have been facing labor strife amid staff shortages and soaring inflation, which have prompted employees to demand higher wages. German officials say despite a recent improvement, the economy is expected to suffer another mild decline in early 2023, as energy prices for households are still increasing. German consumer prices, harmonized to compare with other European Union countries, peaked at 11.6% in October, driven by the surge in energy prices and rising input costs. In the UK, more than 70% of UK households fear that they will be severely hit by the cost of living crisis in the first part of 2023, up from 54% at the end of last year.
Nobody actually wants to be on strike. We want to do our jobs. We want to look after the students here. This is what our passion is. But we've been driven into a situation where we can't even pay our bills now. So basically, we've been forced to do this. Nobody works in education to be rich, but we'd like to have a decent standard of life. And I think we're losing a lot of staff as well. A lot of people are leaving because of the pay.
Meanwhile, in France, police clashed with people protesting the government's pension reform bill. Hundreds of thousands of people attended the rally, which was held in a number of other cities across France, seeking to keep up pressure on the government over the reform plan which aims to raise the retirement age from 62 to 64. President Emmanuel Macron says the reform is vital to ensuring the viability of the pension system.
We would like the age of retirement to remain the same. 62 is already enough for working people like us. We work in kindergarten in the way, and we don't see ourselves working with children at 64. It's already quite hard currently, and going further is impossible.
This is a democracy, and people only have a month to debate the pension reform. The government has kept its project hidden for months, despite the fact that it was ready, and they only yield on details when people take to the streets. Well, we will keep going.
The economic crises have been compounded by the protracted war in Ukraine. The war has pushed up prices, including the price of commodities like energy products. Furthermore, European nations have pledged billions of dollars worth of military aid to Ukraine. And that has sapped the capacities of European major economies to spend money on social welfare programs. The Iranian president, Ebrahim Raisi, visited China for an official three-day state visit aimed at building up bilateral ties. The Iranian president arrived in Beijing earlier on Tuesday as the head of a high-ranking politico-economic delegation on an official invitation by his Chinese counterpart Xi Jinping in Beijing. Speaking to reporters before leaving Tehran for Beijing, Raisi said that Iran and China have similar views on fighting unilateralism at the international level. During the trip, the two countries sought to operationalize the Comprehensive Strategic Partnership Agreement, which was finalized in March 2021 in a bid to strengthen their long-standing economic and political alliance. The $400 billion deal will pave the way for Iran's joining the Belt and Road Initiative, which is a massive infrastructure project stretching from East Asia to Europe. Xi and Raisi attended the signing of 20 cooperation agreements, adding to a 25-year partnership agreement to cooperate in developing oil, industry, and other fields. The two sides signed a number of bilateral cooperation documents in the fields of agriculture, trade, tourism, environmental protection, health, disaster relief, culture, and sports. The Chinese leader said Beijing opposes external forces interfering in Iran's internal affairs and undermining Iran's security and stability. And President Ebrahim Raisi said that Iran and China are friends in hard times, stressing that further strengthening of relations between the two countries will contribute to the security of the region and the world. The visit comes amid rapid geopolitical shifts in the wake of protracted Ukraine war and the end of the unipolar world order led by the U.S. and its Western allies. China is now among Iran's top trading partners since 2022. The 10-month figure of trade between the two nations stands at $25.3 billion. That figure has surpassed the volume of trade between Iran and its other neighboring countries, like the UAE, Turkey, and Iraq. Since March of last year, Iran imported $12.7 billion worth of goods from China, and its exports to Beijing stood at $12.8 billion. President Raisi took office back in 2021, and since then he has tried to readjust Iran's foreign policy with a focus on eastern countries, which has come to be known as the Look to the East policy. It aims to forge alliances with non-Western countries, especially China and Russia. Moreover, Iran is joining the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, a key regional bloc where China is a co-founder. The bloc is a counterweight against U.S.-led security and economic blocs and could significantly reduce the hegemony of the U.S. in Asia. SCO member countries account for more than 40% of the world's population and contribute about 30% of the global gross domestic product, GDP. It's widely believed that Iran's close partnerships with countries like China will significantly erode Western hegemony and pave the way for a new world order.
Foreign ministers from France, Germany, Italy, and the United Kingdom have followed the United States in denouncing the planned expansion of Israeli settlements in the occupied West Bank. In a statement, the ministers said, "We strongly oppose these unilateral actions, which will only serve to exacerbate tensions between Israelis and Palestinians and undermine efforts to achieve a negotiated two-state solution. We continue to support a comprehensive, just, and lasting peace in the Middle East, which must be achieved through direct negotiations between the parties." Norwegian foreign minister also condemned Israel's plans, saying the Israeli settlement policy on occupied land is contrary to international law and must be stopped. The Israeli settlement plans have also drawn condemnation from the Arab world. However, Israel's controversial right-wing minister Itamar Ben-Gvir said he wanted to see more Jewish settlements.
"I say to Americans and Europeans, stop worrying. This is our mission. This is our doctrine. Nine settlements are nice, but it's not enough. We want much more."
The comments fly in the face of international calls for a de-escalation of tensions between Israelis and the Palestinians after months of violence in the occupied West Bank and Al-Quds. The international community views the settlements, hundreds of which have been built across the West Bank since Tel Aviv's occupation of the territory in 1967, as illegal under international law and the Geneva Conventions due to their construction on the occupied territories. The UN Security Council has condemned Israel's settlement activities in the occupied territories in several resolutions. Hossein al-Sheikh, a senior Palestinian official, welcomed the joint statement by Western powers condemning Tel Aviv's plan to build more illegal settlements, but said action needed to be taken. In a statement on Twitter, he said, "We demand that words be turned to deeds." Hardliners who oppose Palestinian statehood comprise a large part of Israel's new cabinet, which has put settlement construction at the top of its priorities. Extremist Israeli minister Bezalel Smotrich said about 10,000 new homes are to be approved. Smotrich said he and his allies were committed to removing completely the restrictions on building in the occupied West Bank. Today, between 600,000 and 750,000 Israelis live in these seizable settlements, equivalent to roughly 11% of the total Jewish Israeli population. The Palestinians seek those territories for a future independent state. Since then, the Tel Aviv regime has openly funded and built settlements for Israeli Jews to live there, offering incentives and subsidized housing. Their statements by the Western powers will likely have little effect on the Israeli hardliners. The regime has never been subjected to real sanctions or accountability. The Israelis have never suffered any pressure, so they keep doing what they're doing. 2022 was the deadliest year for Palestinians in the West Bank since the United Nations started keeping records in 2005. Over 140 Palestinians were killed in the West Bank last year. But already this year, we are only halfway through the second month of 2023, and Israel has already killed around 50 Palestinians in the West Bank. Israel has also regularly bombed Gaza, and now, with a right-wing cabinet in place, the situation is only expected to get worse. Israel's far-right cabinet has approved the legislation for 9 settler outposts in the occupied West Bank. All settlements are illegal according to international law, but who pays attention to international law in this occupied land? Years of war in Syria has destabilized the region, which is still suffering from an ongoing humanitarian emergency. Millions are displaced within Syria or have fled to Turkey, which is contending with high inflation and a deepening economic crisis. The earthquake unleashed widespread damage and destruction in some of the most at-risk areas in the region. A magnitude 7.8 earthquake struck near Nurdaghi in southern Turkey around 4:17 a.m. local time on February 6th. A magnitude 7.5 earthquake followed around later that afternoon around 1 p.m. local time, along with scores of powerful aftershocks. Thousands are injured and thousands more remain trapped in the rubble, and the chance of finding survivors gets narrower and narrower. Search and recovery operations continue with assistance from teams around the world. But freezing weather is hampering rescue efforts and making it even more difficult to access possible survivors. This catastrophe hit an already fragile region, which has been marked by decades of war in Syria and economic, humanitarian, and public health crises. Turkey is facing a profound economic crisis, with a collapsing currency and extraordinary inflation that hit around 80% last year, the highest in about 25 years. The quake-hit part of Turkey also hosts a large population of Syrian refugees. The economic crisis in Turkey has helped fuel a backlash against the approximately 3.6 million Syrian refugees in the country, who are already facing poverty, discrimination, an increase in violent attacks, and the risk of deportation. More than 2 million people in northwestern Syria are also at risk of a deadly cholera outbreak. The outbreak began in northeastern Syria, attributed to contaminated water from the Euphrates River, which people were relying on in part because of the water infrastructure destroyed by years of fighting. About 47% of people in Syria rely on unsafe drinking water, a potentially even bigger risk after the massive infrastructure damage by the earthquake. In northwest Syria, in particular, this outbreak was straining an already stretched and under-resourced health system, which will now also need to find ways to treat those injured in the earthquake. The devastation extends beyond northwest Syria, as the country as a whole has been overwhelmed by years of war and destruction. International sanctions against Syria are also deepening the economic crisis Syrians face. The country faces record and widespread poverty and food shortages. About 90% of Syrians live below the poverty line, and nearly 75% struggle to meet their most basic needs. And across the region, the crisis is still acute, as agencies and officials rush to find survivors in the rubbles and temperatures drop. The earthquake compounds catastrophe upon catastrophe in Syria and Turkey. It is likely to exacerbate those that already exist while creating new, unpredictable ones. The United Nations Secretary General says Syrian President Bashar al-Assad has agreed to open two more border crossings to facilitate relief aid delivery to the northern part of the quake-hit country, which is held by militants. Antonio Guterres announced the development after Assad approved the use of Bab al-Salam and al-Ra'i crossings, which link Turkey to northwestern Syria for outreach purposes. In line with the presidential decree, the crossings would be open for an initial period of 3 months to allow for the timely delivery of humanitarian aid. In addition to authorizing transit through the border passages, the UN chief said facilitating humanitarian access, accelerating visa approvals, and easing travel between hubs will allow more aid to go in faster. The announcement was made after the UN Security Council held a closed-door session on the humanitarian situation in Syria following the quake. The 7.8 magnitude quake that hit Turkey and neighboring Syria last Monday has so far claimed tens of thousands of lives. The biggest part of the fatalities that have been caused in Syria have occurred in the territory which is being held by Takfiri terrorist groups. The approval issued by Assad came after the UN lamented that an anti-government group, which has been designated as terrorist by the international community, was preventing aid consignments from being delivered to the quake-hit areas in the northern part of Syria. A spokesman for the UN's Humanitarian Aid Office said on Sunday that there were issues with approval by the group, which was identified as a terrorist outfit, Hayat Tahrir al-Sham, or HTS. Previously, a number of captured Takfiri terrorists had confessed to close cooperation to U.S. military forces in Syria. There have also been reports of U.S. supporting Takfiri terrorists and helping them to expand across Syria. Also on Sunday, Reuters quoted an HTS source who spoke on the condition of anonymity as confirming that the terror outfit will not let in shipments from government-held parts of Syria, alleging, "We won't allow the government to take advantage of the situation to show they are helping."
Option for today and a better tomorrow. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
ایمان را در خودتون تقویت بکنید، ایمانی که هم در اینجا شما را شرافتمند می کند و هم در پیشگاه حق آبرو دارید و با آبرومندی وارد می شید به تخت اعلی.
In the path of the Imam.
In the name of God, salam and welcome to the program. Dear listeners, if you remember, in the previous episode, we discussed the events before the passing away of Imam Khomeini. You heard that the Imam suffered from heart problem, although he was trying not to worry his family, especially his wife. However, Ms. Khadija Saghafi had somehow realized that Imam Khomeini's health was deteriorating, and he had to rest more, and he checked up from time to time. Today, we are going to dwell upon the sad event of Imam Khomeini's passing away. Stay tuned, please.
Thank you.
Before Imam Khomeini's hospitalization, his wife was suffering from a painful backache, and physicians had prescribed 3 weeks of full rest for her. But the Imam was hospitalized just after 1 week. So Ms. Saghafi had to wake up early every morning to visit the Imam. She relates the story. To avoid disturbance for others, especially the medical team, Haj Isa from among the Imam's servants was assigned to coordinate with the head of the team, Dr. Arefi, to determine a time for visit so that nobody was in the room. Thus, I would go to the hospital in the morning to ask about the Imam's health. He would also ask about my health and my backache and tell me not to walk much, not to go up and down the stairs. Rest more and take care of my health. He was always worried about my health. In those days, he used to tell me, I'm departing. Pray for my departure. When I asked him which part of his body hurt, he would say, my whole body hurts. That would impress me very much and made me cry. But I would avoid crying and would tell him, Inshallah, you will be fine and leave the hospital soon. Imam Khomeini, God's mercy upon him, would never neglect his daily worship, even though he was suffering from numerous pains at hospital. Everyone who had visited him in the last days of his life says that he kept praying in those critical moments. The Imam was very much concerned about the exact time of daily ritual prayer. So, whenever he opened his eyes, he would ask it. His elder daughter, Ms. Sedighe Mustafavi, says, my father, like before, wouldn't spare us ethical advice during the last days of his life. When we went to him for having food, he told me and my sisters several times, the way of the hereafter is hard. Do not commit a sin. Refraining from sin is easier than God's punishment. Perform the ritual obligatory prayer in time, even if you are on the sidewalk. Dear listeners, Farideh Mustafavi, another daughter of Imam Khomeini, also relates, the Imam's health had seriously deteriorated on the last day of his life, but he performed the midday and afternoon prayers. He had fainted and was in coma at the time of the dusk and night prayer, but the physicians announced the time of prayer to inform him. I saw myself that the Imam performed prayer in death agony with his fingertips and the movement of his eyelids. The last day of his life, the Imam's health further deteriorated, and he asked all his family members gather around him. His daughter continues, the Imam said the family to hurry up. I called my sisters and the girls. Everybody gathered around his bed. After a few minutes, he turned to me and said, anyone who wants to stay here, let them stay. And anyone who wants to leave, let them go. Please turn off the light. I want to sleep. Imam Khomeini's family members were highly concerned and went to the hospital repeatedly. It was heard that the Imam would be operated again. His wife was aware of the Imam's severe weakness and she was very upset at the decision. So she protested the head of the medical team. Dr. Arefi calmed Imam Khomeini's wife and assured her that there was no need to operate him. Ms. Mostafavi says, Dr. Arefi told the mother not to be worried as the Imam was fine. Then he showed the mother the way to his room. Then he told me, as the lady is informed of the Imam's condition and thinks that we want to operate him again, that's why she is a bit upset. If you like, I will speak to the lady on the issue. I said, there is no choice because the lady should know everything and we should have informed her earlier. When the lady came out the Imam's room, Dr. Arefi seated her on a corner and explained to her the Imam's latest condition. Upon hearing this, the lady looked to submit and consider everything finished. So she didn't say anything and stood up calmly and left the hospital. The last day of Imam Khomeini's life was very hard for his wife. She took some pills and fell asleep. But when she woke up, the Imam had passed away. He departed the mortal world on June 3, 1989. When asked about that day, she said, it was very hard. I didn't know how much pain the Imam was suffering from. Little by little, I realized that he was departing. I was sick myself, and I couldn't tolerate this disaster. Although I was strong and patient in my life, and I have passed through calamities, now I am weak and old, and the pressure of this disaster is too great for me. Miss Saghafi was so sick that she couldn't even accompany the Imam's sacred body to Behesht-e-Zahra Cemetery. Later on, she related on the issue. 13 days of the Imam's hospitalization was like 13 centuries for me. When I was sitting at his bed, my mind would travel to some of the dimensions of his character through history. When I went to bed at night, hundreds of issues would flash through my mind. Sometimes I would be plunged in his mystic perceptions that had been uttered or penned down by him. Dear listeners, Imam Khomeini passed away at 22:23 on June 3, 1989, and plunged into grief not only Iran, but also Muslims and the oppressed in the world.
الرحمن الرحيم
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is the part of the speech delivered by the leader of the Islamic Revolution during a meeting with a number of elegists, eulogists, and religious poets in the Imam Khomeini Husseiniyah on January 12, 2023. The meeting took place one day before the anniversary of the birth of Lady Fatima al-Zahra salamullah alayha. You need to be well aware of what is taking place in the world and what is happening inside the country. For example, consider recent events. I would like to say something about the recent events in Iran. In recent events, the enemy's plot was comprehensive, but their calculations were wrong. This is important. The enemy's plot had no faults. However, the calculations they had made for implementing these plots were wrong. When we say that the enemy's plot was comprehensive, we are saying all the major factors that a world power can use to disrupt and destroy a country. All of these elements were used, all of them. They lined up all these elements. There was an economic factor. Of course, the economic situation of the country was not in a good state. It is not good. People's problems with the cost of living prepared the background for them to use this factor.
دنیای اسلام یک
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
Other factors included security factors and espionage teams from all sides. There was an uproar of Iranophobia in the world. They began promoting Iranophobia in different forms in the months leading up to the unrest using the propaganda tools of the enemies. The US, the Zionist global arrogance in general. Iranophobia, this is another factor. It is an element used for destroying. Rallying support from certain individuals inside the country began a while ago as well. And this is another important factor. They provoked unrest using various motives in the country, including ethnic, religious, political, and personal motives. Deciding to betray the country because of petty things such as, why didn't you greet me properly? Or why didn't you give me such and such position? They sought to use and prepare these individuals to collaborate with them. There were also elements of widespread propaganda, such as the television and satellite channels, social media, and the internet. These are all factors that the enemy had lined up.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done.
Think better. Welcome to a better you. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio. History of Knowledge in Iran. In the name of God, salam, and welcome to the program. The year 2022 was dubbed by the United Nations Educational, Scientific, and Cultural Organization, UNESCO, as the International Year of Basic Sciences for Sustainable Development, IYBSSD 2022, to mark the importance and role of knowledge. As per the UNESCO motto of the year 2022, more serious attention has been paid to sciences like physics, chemistry, math, geology, biology, statistics, and genetics. Planning and execution of events related to basic sciences, promotion of programs to familiarize various nations with their notables in basic sciences, and acquaintance with the global capacities of this domain were among the programs of last year. In this new series, we are going to make you familiar with the past record of basic sciences in Iran and the innumerable services that Iranians have rendered to mankind through centuries. Basic sciences play an important role in execution of developmental programs. For instance, they provide us with necessary tools to face vital challenges, such as global access to food, energy, hygiene, and communication technologies. Basic sciences are the fundamentals of technological progresses. Moreover, training of specialists and development of life conditions require the growth and development of basic sciences. History of production of sciences in Iran dates back to very old times. Knowledge was venerated and respected so much so that poets would versify poems on the issue. The globally renowned poet Abulqasem Ferdowsi was one of such poets. Among other poets who have glorified knowledge, mention can be made of Rudaki, Samarqandi, Nasir Khosrow, Saadi, and so on. Nasir Khosrow says in a poem that if you achieve knowledge, you will dominate over the sky. Islam has put a special emphasis on acquisition of sciences, and different sciences are highly recommended, particularly those which are more useful for mankind. In view of this, scholars, scientists, and researchers are highly respected. Although Iran, due to its unique geopolitical situation, diverse climates, and endless resources, has been subjected to cruel assaults of different invaders, it has attracted the beauties of invading cultures and highly impacted them. Therefore, today, one can find countless customs, vocabulary, and inventions among many nations which have their roots in Iran's rich culture. Iran used to be known as the cradle of sciences. For example, Muhammad ibn Zakaria Khwarizmi devised algorithm which revolutionized the science of algebra. Hence, he founded the basis for Indian and Iranian arithmetic system. This caused Europeans to change their numerical system from Latin into Indian. Al-Khwarizmi's inventions had a fundamental impact on advancement of math in Western countries. Medicine has had a bright record in Iran, and many books have been written in this field. Iran has played a significant role in expansion of sciences in ancient Greece and has also been influential in the Indian medicine. Jondi Shapur University in Ahvaz was a noted academic center in old Iran, and many students would come to it to study sciences, particularly medical sciences, as there was a hospital adjacent to the university, which has been claimed to be the first hospital in the modern meaning of the word. This hospital enjoyed separate wards for different patients and various medical services. Mohammad Zakaria Razi, the renowned Iranian physician, chemist, and philosopher, was the first person to use experimental medicines to cure diseases. He discovered alcohol, sulfuric acid, chloric acid, and citric acid. He attained many achievements in medicine, so that George Sartain has called him the greatest physician of Islam and Middle Ages. Apparently, Ibn Sina, or Avicenna, authored his Al-Qanun book through inspiration of Razi's Al-Hawi. Nearly 1,000 years ago, Abu Rayhan Biruni, another globally noted Iranian genius, wrote an encyclopedia on astronomy wherein he has discussed the rotation of the Earth around the Sun. A long time before the Danish Tycho Brahe, he drew the first map of the sky using the pictures and figures of animals to describe heavenly constellations and bodies. In 10th century AD, the prominent Iranian astronomer and mathematician Abdurrahman Sufi studied the stars and for the first time registered the galaxy without the help of a telescope. He discovered the nebula Chained Woman on Andromeda Galaxy. Thus, he corrected the views of Ptolemy. Jaber ibn Hayyan was an Iranian chemist and philosopher who is known as the father of chemistry. His discoveries have been gathered in an encyclopedia. This genius devised many methods and invented many tools which are used to date by chemists. Ibn Haytham, known as Al-Hazen in the West, was another great Iranian scientist who is famous for his writings on optics and experiments on lens, mirror, and light. He's known as the father of light physics. To name a few other Iranian scientists, mention can be made of the astronomer and mathematician Abu Abbas Fazl Hatam Nehrizi, Banu Musa brothers, who were specialists in math, astronomy, and mechanics. We can also name Abu Zayd Ahmad ibn Balkhi, geographer and mathematician. Abu al-Wafa Buzjani, mathematician and astronomer. Qiyasuddin Jamshid Kashani, mathematician and astronomer. And Omar Khayyam, astronomer, mathematician and poet. Well, on that note, we have come to the end of this episode. We hope that you have enjoyed this program. Till next episode, goodbye.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pourreza, London.
Rashan Saglam, Istanbul.
سید امین عالمی، کابل.
شاهان بات، ایندین ادمنستریت کشمیر.
Round the world with reporters.
Another scene of wide-scale destruction in Syria, this time signed by Israel. Israeli fighter jets attacked multiple residential targets in Damascus, killing at least 5 people and injuring 15 others, with the majority being civilians.
All residents were sleeping in the building. This is a residential neighborhood. The missile landed here. A number of residents were killed and others injured. There are no officials or any prominent figures living here, only ordinary civilians. All apartments were heavily affected.
At 12:15 a.m., we heard loud noises. I asked my mother to step back from the windows. Suddenly, the house shook and we felt an explosion. All windows broke. We asked for help. This is a tragic reality.
The aggression caused significant damage to private property in the heavily populated Kafr Susa quarter in Damascus. Apartments, balconies, and walls collapsed, and nearby cars were affected. Syria's ancient citadel in Old Damascus was also hit. Analysts say Israel's intention for these attacks is to keep Syria in a state of instability.
For 10 years, Israel has been adopting the strategy of strategic battles between wars. The aim is to eliminate any chance of a war on Israel through weakening the enemy. Israel wants Syria to stay in a state of war and instability. This aggression in particular comes as more countries are planning to restore relations with Syria, something Israel wants to foil.
Syria's foreign ministry sent a letter to the UN saying the strikes are part of Israel's systematic aggression against civilians, urging punishment for the crimes committed by the regime. The ministry called for necessary measures to end such aggressions, as well as a clear condemnation from the United Nations Security Council. One shock after another. This is how Syrians live every day, not knowing whether they'll be waking up to an earthquake, act of aggression, or a terrorist attack. All they ask is for the international community to wake up and help ease their unprecedented plights. Hamad Ali, Damascus.
The Rome-based Islamic Center Imam Mahdi has recently published a book on the late Iranian commander Lieutenant General Qassem Soleimani. Titled A God's Fighter, the Italian language book revolves around General Soleimani's endeavors to defend the oppressed people. A man, quote, driven by an unshakable faith in God. The book is a collection of messages, thoughts, and letters by General Soleimani, a project that has been supported by all the members of the Imam Mahdi Center.
Who did General Soleimani fight for? By publishing this book, you wanted to shed a light on a man who was always described as an anti-something. Yes, he was against Zionism, he fought against Daesh, but he did all that for God, and that's why we call him a God's fighter in our book. This project intends to fill a void in Italy, as for far too long, all accounts on General Soleimani have distorted his true image.
In 2020, 40 days after U.S. assassination of Major General Qassem Soleimani, hundreds of his posters were hung across many Italian cities. Initiatives to honor the slain Iranian military officer were held in Rome and Milan.
Imam Mahdi Center's book on Soleimani also contains speeches by the leader of the Islamic Revolution Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei and Grand Ayatollah Ali Sistani on General Soleimani's martyrdom. The publication also contains photos portraying Iran's former top military commander.
Finding good quality photos of Soleimani was a daunting task. There are only a few good shots of him around. He was not a poser. He was a humble man and he didn't love to be in the spotlight. My favorite photos are the ones depicting General Soleimani with kids and also his mother.
General Qassem Soleimani, similar to my father, because he caused that I love Islam more and more. He is my